It's where the heart is. It's where the love is. It's where we are at last. Can come home.
We've just been listening to my song, Come to the Altar, from the album Okwaka Speaks, the Words and Music of Mother God. My guest, Angelus Arian, is a cultural anthropologist, award-winning author, educator, and consultant to many organizations and businesses, raised biculturally and first generation of a Basque immigrant family from the Pyrenees Mountains of Spain. Angelus discovered as a young girl her deep interest in teaching and in learning about other cultures because of her own bicultural experience. With family in both the Basque communities of Idaho and Spain, she eventually pursued her interests in cultural and international work through an advanced degree at UC Berkeley, which allowed her to learn about cross-cultural and indigenous traditions. Angelus has remained committed for over 45 years to the pursuit of universal and perennial wisdoms and has disseminated them through her national and international work to be preserved for the generations of the future. She has written 7 books, which have been translated into 13 languages, which include The Second Half of Life, Opening the 8 Gates of Wisdom, winner of the 2007 Nautilus Award for the Best Book on Aging. John O'Donohue writes, "With the demise of the traditional soul shelters of myth, religion, and vision, the individual stands naked and bereft in our world of crisis and confusion. It is the achievement of the scholar and anthropologist Dr. Angelus Arian to excavate our various traditions and return with this lyrical and erudite shelter book, and offers the pilgrim who has entered middle age a fascinating landscape of adventure and awakening." Angelus is most known for her book, The Fourfold Way, Walking the Paths of the Warrior, Healer, Teacher, and Visionary, from which her programs, keynotes, and workshops draw most extensively to enhance the personal and professional development of others. Through her Fourfold Way programs and lifelong love of nature, she has provided 3-day, 3-night solo wilderness experiences for over 6,000 people. Angelus has taught at the University of California system at Berkeley, Los Angeles, Irvine, Davis, Santa Cruz, and San Francisco. She has been an adjunct professor at 3 Bay Area graduate schools, California Institute of Integral Studies, John F. Kennedy University, my alma mater, and the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. Her expertise with diverse multicultural issues, mediation and conflict resolution, has been used by the International Rights Commission and the World Indigenous Council. Requests for her organizational and international skills have taken her expertise to over 15 countries. Her commitment to international work led her to establish her Foundation for Cross-Cultural Education and Research. She has received 3 honorary doctorate degrees in recognition of her work. She is the president of the Foundation for Cross-Cultural Education and Research and a fellow at the Institute of Noetic Sciences. Angelus enjoys living with her sister in a 100-year-old house in nature-full Sonoma County. As vast and deep as the breadth of her expansive and far-reaching lifelong work, Angelus is best known for her personhood, depth of character, compassionate engagement, skillful and astute communication abilities. She is a wonderful storyteller with a delightful sense of humor, creative outlook on life, and is beloved by her students, colleagues, friends, and family. She writes, "When you find the courage to change at midlife, a miracle happens. Your character is opened, deepened, strengthened, softened. You return to your soul's highest values. With the second half of life, she takes you step by step through each gate to deepen your most valuable relationships, reclaim your untended creative talents, and shift your focus from ambition to meaning, to grow into the exceptional elder you've always imagined you would one day become." Welcome, dear Angelus, to Women's Voices.
Well, thank you very much, Jamie. It's an honor and privilege to be a part of your program.
Well, thank you. I'm so grateful to have you as my guest. The first question I generally ask my guests, given that this is Women's Voices, is what part did your own mother play in your becoming the amazing wise woman that you are today?
Oh, she was an incredible woman who was very encouraging, had a great sense of humor, was really a master in the home arts of sewing and gardening and cooking, and really believed that her 2 daughters could do most anything. And I grew up believing that.
That's a gift, such a gift.
Yeah, she was a generous human being.
Lovely. Well, there's so much to talk about, but shall we just kind of talk about the book right now?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. You talk about the 8 gates of wisdom. And in your book, you initially talk about the threshold work at the 8 gates. So however you'd like to talk about that, please do.
Well, there are really 5 transitions that most everyone will be in at different junctions of their life. They'll either be in a transition connected with work or relationship or health or finances, or experience a role identity change, or experience something spiritually or transcendently that they can't quite explain. And these transitions put us at a threshold, and threshold literally means place or gate in which one passes through, or a personal rite of passage that actually delivers somebody into new growth and unfoldment. So there are actually two reasons in why I wrote The Second Half of Life. One was that in this culture, we hold the horrific statistic of being the only country in the world where the highest suicide rates are between its teens and its elders. Both groups, youth and elders, we have not fully engaged. Our elders, we don't draw upon them or call upon them for engagement of their shared wisdom and life experience. And with our youth, we don't engage them enough in creative problem solving and fresh eyes. And so that was one thing that captured my attention. The other thing that captured my attention is that the United States, as of 2 years ago, that we have more people over the age now of 60 than we have in any other age group, and entering into what are called the wisdom years. And cross-culturally, youth is identified as ages 1 to 35, and midlife is from 35 to 50. And then our decades of the 50s is called an integrative decade, where we integrate the best of youth and the best of midlife in order to prepare for our wisdom years, which begin when we're 60, and our 60s are considered the youth of our wisdom years, our 70s the midlife of our wisdom years, and true eldership begins in the period of 80 to 100. And with increased longevity, the first half of life has been well marked, but from 50 to 100 has not been well marked. So that's what led me to this great exploration of seeing what were the benchmarks in the second half of life, or the eight gates that we might need to explore.
Yeah, that's wonderful. No, we haven't had it delineated in any way. That's why I've just been thrilled to hear you speak of that. You know, I was thinking that not only, as you point out, our society is growing older, but I wonder if our whole world consciousness is preparing to make a shift of maturing, perhaps, or awakening to the sacred feminine. I mean, to the feminine within each of us. I certainly consider it the mother.
Right. Well, I do think it's a period of accelerated evolution, and that's exciting. And I'd like to see, what's going to come of that, because they're just to think of what we've experienced in evolution and change in the last 50 years has been revolutionary.
Yeah.
And just even in the last 10 with the cell phones and the internet and the email and faxes.
It's true. It seems as if everything is just rushing. I mean, we're so much in a different place than we were even 2 years ago.
Yes, that's really true. Yeah, that's well said. And it's interesting. There are there's a lot that we can do in the fast lane, but there are two things that we can never do in the fast lane, which is to integrate our experience and also to deepen our character, is that we have to come back into our natural rhythm, which is nature's rhythm, and nature's rhythm is medium to slow. Nothing moves rapidly in nature unless it's in danger, and then it will move very rapidly for about 20 minutes. But nature's rhythm is medium to slow, and we're really out of balance, and many of us will take a lot of time to attend to work and family, but we ignore the third important crucible besides work and family that we need to attend to every day, which is time for self and time for reflection and renewal and integration, that from that place of every day taking the time for silence or quiet or renewal and regeneration, then we have more to give to work and to family. And I also think it's interesting that in America that there's a high resistance to carpooling simply because it's the only time that people have for themselves.
Yeah, that's true. It is quite a statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're so far from taking that walk through the woods. You know,
yeah.
Most people are in the middle of a busy city.
Yeah, and the second half of life, or what I like to call the third act of life, you know, the first act is our youth, our second act is midlife, and then the third act is where everything gets resolved, like in a play or in a book. And so it's a very creative and active time, although the shift is very different. It's in the decade of the 50s, you begin to experience that shift of from ambition to meaning, or from doing to being, from acquisition to divestiture to moving out of being more me-oriented to we-oriented. And so there are many different shifts. And in the third act, we really won't engage anything unless it has heart and fire, or that it's meaningful, because there's the experience of having been there, done that. And there's a different quest that starts taking place, usually in the first half of life, which is very appropriate, is that develop our ego strengths and our gifts and talents, and we go through anticipating and meeting family expectations or cultural expectations. But in the second half of life, it's really a soul's journey, and really coming into the individuation of really getting asking ourselves the big questions about who am I beyond what I do, and beyond my roles, and beyond my interests. And more interested in character development.
Yes, it's so good to hear all this. It's just so good. It's so heartening.
Yeah.
I want to interrupt here and say that this is KZYX and Women's Voices. You are listening to Angelus Arian, who is speaking about her book, The Second Half of Life. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
that was good timing. Yeah.
I also, in your book, there is so much in your book, but I've just loved what you've said already. But I love your stories. I mean, of people, real life stories that you quote so many different people. And I was thinking about, you know, just pulling out Tolstoy's journey.
Oh, right. Tolstoy, who became so successful as a writer, and yet he was so interested in meaningful conversations, and that if he was going to write, it had to be meaningful rather than something that would be marketable. So it's interesting how in his life he really, and especially since his career in writing was so successful, he was just bombarded by people. But in the second half of life, there's such a desire for quality rather than quantity, and for experiencing a more balanced life.
Right. It was on page 33, I think.
That
he grew his own. He went through a really depression about.
Yes.
And then he ended up growing his own. We never hear these things. Growing his own food and living out his days in service and meditation.
Right, and then holding. If people wanted to come see him for dialogue, they would come there, and he would hold very small group sessions But he led much more of a solitary life in the second half of life than he did in the first half of life. And I think it's so interesting is that, you know, some people know right away what their dream and purpose is in life, and it becomes changed later, but it has a different focus. For example, who we know is Dr. Zeus, Theodore Dreiser. You know, when he was a small boy, he knew that what he wanted to do was to illustrate books, and he became the first half of his life a fantastic illustrator, but an illustrator of classic fairy tales, where he would do all the block letters and the ink outlines, and illustrated many of the Grimm tales. But there was a precision to it, and at 58 he decided enough. Or 53, I guess it was, and enough of this, you know, that he wanted to write his own stories and to move outside of the Renaissance block lines where you just use red and green and blue and black and no vivid colors and in the illustration. And so then he took all of his skill level and gave us the Dr. Zeus series in the second half of his life, where for which he won the Pulitzer Prize when he was in his 70s. And someone asked him what was his most favorite book, and he said, "You only grow old once." And I thought, "Oh, I have to look that up," which was a real wonderful a humorous book about aging that he illustrated. So it's just interesting. And then there's, you know, the Japanese line artist that we know, Hokusai, who did Mount Fuji from many different seasons, Fuji in the winter, Fuji in the summer, Fuji in spring, Fuji in the fall, and these exquisite scrolls, 16 of them, all different views of Fuji. And the first half of his life, he was noted for being an engineer that restructured the water flows in the rice paddies. But all the years that he worked in the paddies, he always had a huge view of Fuji. And so someone said, "Well, why at 70s, you know, in your 70s, have you become so interested in this?" And he said, "Well, he recognized he was on the western side of the mountain, and that his time was short on this earth, and he hoped that by doing these, that it would leave an imprint in his bones, and he could take Mount Fuji to him to the invisible world." So,
wonderful.
So it's very interesting.
You do in your book. You talk about the threshold work at the eight gates in the beginning of your book.
Yeah, each gate that we go through provides a task, a gift, and a challenge. And each of these eight gates we've visited at some time in our life, but in the second half of life, we cannot ignore any of them. That we're required to come through them differently, with a different level of wisdom. Wisdom is not age-bound, but after the age of 50, if you're not demonstrating some kind of wisdom, it's less than becoming, because we have many 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds who are very wise. But after 50, you need to be demonstrating some of your experience. And so the threshold is asking you to take a look at what is the gift, for example, of the Silver Gate. There's a story that I found in all the fairy tales of the world, that there are really 8 gates that are symbolic, but they address certain issues as how do we approach what is new and the unknown, which is the Silver Gate. How do we let go of old roles and identities, which is the White Picket Fence Gate? How do we move into that which consistently changes from puberty to the end of our life, which is the Clay Gate, our relationship to sensuality, sexuality, and care of the body? And then the Relationship Gate, where we're totally humbled and work through issues of pride and fear, which is the Black and White Gate, which then takes us to the Rustic Gate, which is our life work and creativity and our contribution and service, and then to the Bone Gate, where we have to reclaim our authenticity. We're given a chance to do that at the Black and White Gate in our looking at relationships. But wherever we're still flirting with pride or cleverness and or fear or our conflict avoidant, is that we have to strengthen that at the Bone Gate, which is the reclamation of the authentic self. And then we come to the Natural Gate, all those places in our life where we've been contented and satisfied and happy. And then the Gold Gate is all the things and aspects that we've completed in our life or finished in our life. We all come through the Silver Gate, which is our birth, and we all go out the Gold Gate, which is our death. And there are many gates in between.
Wonderful. I think it's in the Silver Gate that you speak of the four fires.
Yes.
And I just love that. The four fire, the sacred texts refer to these as...
Yeah, the... four fires are the fire of vision, the fire of the heart, the creative fire, and the soul's fire. And the Silver Gate is anything that's new in our life, and how much do we allow something new to come into our life. And in the second half of life, the metaphor of fire is associated with meaning, that which inspires us. And whatever inspires us ignites these four fires. There's either the fire of vision or the fire of the heart or the creative fire or the soul fire. And so in the second half of life, in the wisdom years, is what galvanizes us or what motivates us is one of those fires.
Yeah, and you say that Martin Luther King, Eleanor Roosevelt, Mahatma Gandhi, and Mother Teresa were seized by all four fires.
Right.
Which is often the case with anyone who is inspired by a great dream or who explores any one of the fires in depth.
Yeah, which is perfect for Martin Luther King Day.
Isn't it? Yes. Well, sometimes I feel like I have been so pushed in my own creative, so I feel as if I've been seized by a fire. It's quite amazing.
Oh, for sure, and especially, you know, your program in the Silver Gate, you're always interviewing new people, you know, so it's always bringing a new perspective in, which is a really Silver Gate activity, mm-hmm. is how much new do I bring into my life, or the, what is my relationship to the unknown or the unexpected? Do I meet it with curiosity rather than fear? And in the second half of life, we grow more of our curiosity or return more to that childlike sense of adventure and exploration and wonder and awe, or we stay in the status quo or in our comfort zones, or stop growing. And the Silver Gate is all about how much we're willing to continue to learn and to grow and to open to new experiences. And I think it's so interesting that with everything that's happening with the internet is that children are helping elders learn about the internet, and then the elders hold the face-to-face skills and the social skills, and part of eldership or the wisdom years, especially for people who are in their 50s and over, is to be able to pass on those skills on a face-to-face level rather than just a social networking context.
Mm-hmm. In your Silvergate, you quote Clarissa Pinkola Estes, the function and power, shall I read that? The power of fire's transformative nature.
Yes, yes. Why don't you do that?
Deep in the wintry parts of our mind, we are hearty stock and know there is no such thing as work-free transformation. We know that we will have to burn to the ground in one way or another and then sit right in the ashes of who we once thought we were and go from there.
Yeah, that's a beautiful quote. Very powerful.
It is.
Yeah, and it's so true about the approach to the second half of life, is that we start again in a very different way that's aligned with meaning rather than ambition.
Is there anything that you would like to read?
Well, one of the things that I thought about, the first half of life is so much about being success-oriented. And someone asked Ralph Waldo Emerson, what did he constitute as success in the third act? Because the third act, after we integrate the best of our youth and the best of our midlife, and we take a look at and reflect on course correcting so that we can resolve things in the third act, which is from the 50s to our hundreds, is that we can really create to have it be a fabulous ending that is meaningful, truly meaningful for us. And he wrote a wonderful poem, which I excerpted part of it, on what he felt was really true success. He said, to leave the world a little better, whether by healthy child, a garden patch, or redeemed social condition, to know even one life has breathed easier because you were in it and that you lived, that is to have succeeded. And I particularly love the line about even to know that one life breathed easier because you lived, or that you were in it, is that each one of us know of at least one person who has breathed easier because we've been in it. Whether it's a garden patch, a healthy child, or some redeemed social condition, to know even one life has breathed easier because you lived, that is to have succeeded. And I think that really says a lot. There's a deep acceptance that comes in the second half of life, and surrender and openness and humility that comes with wisdom, that provides a lot of solace and contentment. But also the second half of life has us take a look at how we can course correct the past by making better choices in the present and create a preferred future. And I think that's the heart of what each of the gates are allowing us to do, is to look at where we might carry, especially at the black and white gate, where we might have forgiveness work to do because of betrayals, or or exploring what we're learning about love or what we know about love, and what we want to pass on to our children about love, because human beings are here really for two purposes, either to learn about love, everyone is to learn about love and relationship, whether it's through friendship or collegial collegiality or partnership or being a parent. And the other is to contribute, to serve, to make a contribution. We all have a purpose in which our particular gifts and talents can be used. So,
good to know.
Yeah. And it's never ending. Never ending.
That's true. And I find myself, you know, just gripped by different feelings and emotions that come through me these days.
Yes.
You do many other, you do many, many things. You are really, really busy.
It appears that way. I'm learning how to choose well, and also I'm in my second half of life, so I'm choosing more quality rather than quantity, so I choose well.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
And so the things that you put your attention to do have meaning, and they have meaning for other people as well.
Yes.
So that's kind of the part of it. Thank you for that.
Yeah, well, thank you for making a space for women's voices, and thank you for the pioneering work that you've done as well.
Thank you. So tell us about your Fourfold Way programs.
Basically an educational program that where people, there are actually four archetypes that every culture of the world has laws of governance or leadership. Training, which is the way of the warrior, and warrior is an old-fashioned term for leadership. And so we explore the, in the season of winter the cross-cultural skills that strengthen leadership and creative problem-solving. Spring is not a culture in the world that doesn't have a healthcare model or a medical model or a folk medicine model, and sometimes both of those run side by side, and that's the way of the healer. And so we explore in the spring the archetype of the healer and the eight universals that support health and well-being. In the summer, there's not a culture in the world that doesn't have the creative arts or the performing arts or sports or the martial arts, or a way of manifesting your life dream or your life purpose or your creativity. So we explore all the forms of how to manifest or create or to serve or to contribute. And then the season of the fall, there's not a culture in the world that doesn't have an educational model that transmits values and beliefs and educates their generations of the future through education. And so in the fall is the season of harvest and letting go, which is also the way of the teacher, which is the wisdom way. So we explore all the ways of the different perennial wisdoms. And within those programs is the three-day, three-night wilderness experience, whether it's in a five-day format or a 12-day format or the ongoing year-long.
Could you talk about that wilderness experience a little more, describe it a little more?
People can do it in a modified form that are not physically well and all, is that they'll spend 3 days or three nights in their room in silence, or they'll go out on the land, spend 3 days and three nights. You only go out if physically that's something that you can do. Some people like to go out during the day, come in at night. Other people stay out for the full 3 days, full three nights. Any time that we connect deeply to outer nature, we connect deeply to our own nature. And most people in our society, you know, as children, we spent more time outdoors than we did indoors. And as adults, we have a tendency to reverse the process. But any time in nature, even if it's for a day or an hour, we need natural light, natural air. So I always suggest an hour outdoors every day, but through the program, I really prepare people well and who are going out and whatever format that they choose and coming back in. And I've now taken over 10,000 people through that experience of different ages, and it's always transformative. And unfortunately, because there's been the boom of the internet, we now have what Richard Lotz calls the lost child in the woods, what's called nature deficit disorder.
Yes.
And so we're needing to get our children out more that, and to connect with nature, because once we lose our connection to outer nature, we also lose our connection to our own internal wilderness or nature.
Yes, yes. That's so true. I've observed that so much with my own grandchildren, seeing them grow up inside.
Yeah.
It's very painful to see.
Yeah.
Where does all of this take place?
Northern California. I have access to 300 acres of old Pomo ceremonial land that I've been privileged to take people on to, and then in the Arizona desert.
Sounds wonderful. There must be a lot of energy from the Pomos.
Yes, there is. Yeah, yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. And,
well, you're welcome.
I appreciate being one of the voices that you've selected to come forward.
Well,
and thank you for your pioneering work. It
really
makes a big difference. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, you're so welcome.
I appreciate what you're saying. It's very sweet of you. And it has been a journey, and I've been utterly grateful for the opportunity to do this and to bring people as yourself on.
Did you start this in your second half of life?
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Well, I mean, I've started a lot in the second half of my life. Yes, music and words and poetry and painting, it's all been pouring out of me.
Yeah, the best is yet to come. I keep telling everybody that each decade is always better and better.
Yes, yes. It's quite amazing when I think it's all over and then here comes another big rush.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you want to give us your website?
It's www.angelusarian.com.
And that's it. And so anyone can plug in there to get all the information.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Could you talk a little more about the Gold Gate and the gate? Is it the Natural Gate that's just before that one? Anyway, I'm 77, so I'm particularly interested in these last couple of gates.
Well, they actually happen. The gates, you know,
of course,
happen in a cyclic rather than a linear fashion. We all come through the Silver Gate. We all go out the Gold Gate. But it's interesting how often we've been at the Gold Gate, because whenever we finish a project, that's a certain letting go and a certain death. Divorce is something that's at the Gold Gate. It's the death of a relationship or a form of a relationship. Whenever we say goodbye to people as they move away, or all goodbyes and farewells are all a practice. The Gold Gate is a practice of detachment or non-attachment. And, of course, the ultimate letting go is our death, and that's why all of the cultures of the world have rituals to their ancestors, because the ancestors have done the ultimate letting go of their body and have faced the last great mystery, which is death and a rebirth into a formless form or into the invisible world. Every night we practice the art of dying when we put ourselves in bed and we let go. It's a letting go and trusting that we'll be coming back. So there are many ways and practices of letting go, and that we practice all through our lives. There are people who, you know, are able to prepare for the journey where we haven't had that opportunity before, where sometimes people may get an illness that begins to prepare them either for their death or for a whole renewal or relooking at life. That's why illness is often seen as an initiation, because mm-hmm. it doesn't automatically mean death, but it does mean a resurgence. If certain illnesses go into remission, that there's a relooking at my values, a revaluing of my life. The natural gate, where there's a desire to spend more time in nature and in silence, but also a time for reflecting on what makes us happy and where we've been happy in our life, because one of the great illusions that we have to drop in the second half of life is that someone else is responsible for our happiness, is that we are responsible for our happiness, not our partners or our children or our grandchildren. If they happen to make us happy, that's great. But what makes me happy that's not relationally dependent?
Uh-huh.
And that's also a big shift that takes place in the second half of life, that mm-hmm. I can be really happy and content by, you know, seeing a hummingbird or watching a squirrel go from limb to limb, or, you know, music that could make me very happy, yes. or art, or right. Colors, or can make me happy. And if my grandchildren make me happy and my partner makes me happy, that's frosting to the cake, but it's not the cake. Yeah.
It's hard to get all of that clear.
Yeah, it is. But that's one of the things that does start to get clear in the
yes.
second half of life.
And the other thing is, the older you get, that you have fewer responsibilities.
That's right.
And so
more
it gives
freedom.
You, yeah, so you have the opportunity to explore and to allow things to bubble up.
Yes, and, that's really true.
And work with it and pay attention to how you're feeling today.
Yeah.
How am I feeling today? What's calling on me? That's the really wonderful gift, I think, of growing older, that you have that opportunity.
Yes, that's one of the great secrets.
It is. Well, you know, I'm reading here, we're drawn to revisit old memories, peoples, and places that we left long ago, coming back full circle. And I do that a lot. I'm still in connection with, you know, with a few people that I grew up with. In fact, I can even go back, which I'm very grateful for. I know it's really unique. The house I grew up in, the farm, is still there.
Oh, it's fabulous.
And I can go back and visit, and I do, and I spend the night there where I grew up. And
yeah, that's so incredible to go full circle like that.
It is. I feel each time I go back to the Midwest, to where I grew up on prairie land, that I come back strengthened.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I'm very grateful for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, that's another thing, you know, accepting what is.
That is true. And one of the things about that, too, that after, you know, after midlife, I realized no longer could I make things happen. Up until then, I thought, well, I'm going to get a master's degree, and I did it. And I did I plan.
Right.
But at a certain point, I could plan all I wanted to, and it wouldn't happen. Planning didn't make it happen.
Right.
And to become aware of that, and then eventually to trust it.
Yes. Yeah, and that's another shift that happens from control to trust.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge shift.
And it's quite a relief when you find
out. Oh, it is. It's like, why did I effort so hard?
Right. It's not in my hands anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, here we go. It is just, our time is coming to an end. And I want to thank you so much, Angela, for
being
my guest.
Oh, well, thank you, Jamie. Thank you. It's been an honor and privilege.
It's been, indeed, it's been my delight to have you here. And I'm sure that's true for our audience as well. So thank you again.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for your song at the beginning of the hour as well.
Thank you.
It was very beautiful.
Thank you. It's what it's all about.
Yeah, thank you.
All righty. Good night.
Night.